from the severely soiled studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another containerized hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. It's a new year, and that means new soil for your potted plants. Or does it? I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, I'll discuss how to make old soil new again. If that would only work for me. Plus a plentiful package of superb special features, and of course your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and amazingly archaic accusations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up right after the news.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the sluggy studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another hopeful hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and in this week's In the News, we present a story with a unique origin. I was about to turn off the TV towards the end of Dan Aykroyd's The Unbelievable on the History Channel when this segment began. You can view it online. I believe it to be Season 3, Episode 6, Outlandish Ideas. I did not turn off the TV, watched in amazement, and then immediately Googled the name of the machine involved, which took me to a Reuters news agency story by Michelle Green, for which we are using the original Reuters title. A robot that thrives on slugs. And we quote, "For centuries, the humble slug has eaten its way through the world's vegetable patches, frustrating farmers and gardeners alike. But thanks to British scientists, the great plant muncher is about to be munched. These scientists at Britain's University of West England have developed the Slugbot, a prototype robot capable of hunting down more than 100 slugs an hour. It operates after dark, when slugs are, of course, most active, and uses their rotting body to generate the electricity it needs to power itself. The Slugbot is the brainchild of engineers at the university's Intelligent Autonomous Systems Laboratory, who wanted to build the world's first fully autonomous robot. Slugs were chosen because they are a major pest, are plentiful, have no hard shell or skeleton, and are reasonably large," explains Dr. Ian Kelly, creator of Slugbot. "The two-foot-high machine uses an image sensor that beams out red light to pinpoint the slugs, which emit a different infrared wavelength than worms or snails. The machine then uses a carbon fiber arm with a three-fingered claw to grab the slugs and store them in the tank. After a hard night of slug busting, the robot returns home and unloads its victims into a fermentation tank. The fermentation tank turns the slug sludge into electricity that is then used to recharge the Slugbot. The robot was voted one of the best inventions of the year by Time magazine. Gardeners agree. Adam Pascoe, editor of the BBC Gardeners World magazine, told the Daily Mail, "Anything would create a foolproof method of destroying slugs would be fantastic." But a spokesperson for the university told Reuters that there were no plans to release the slug bot on the commercial market. Wah, wah. It was a proof-of-concept machine only, she explained. That news will disappoint Britain's farmers, who spend an average £20 million a year trying to eradicate the slimy creatures. And in a very personal way, me, and more than likely a lot of yous out there. I think we need to stage an old-fashioned protest march outside the company's headquarters with big signs reading, "We want Slugbot! Slugbot for all!" Oh, and a tip of the hat to the wonderful Dan Aykroyd and his talented team of producers and researchers. I also want to tip the hat to William Shatner, who hosts a different but somewhat similar show on the History Channel and had nothing to do with this. But it allows me to semi-quote Scotty in a favorite episode of classic Star Trek. Quote, "Aye, sir, before the Klingons were into warp, I transported the whole kit and caboodle into their engine room, where those slugs will be no trivial at all."
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I am your host. Coming up soon, we have a whole bunch of special features for you that I think you'll really enjoy. So, don't touch that tuner or your phone or whatever. As long as you're hearing me, don't touch anything, okay? Then when I'm done talking, you can start touching stuff. As promised, it is time for a special feature, which we are calling Rose or Not a Rose. Now, normally, this is an email I would be reading on air because the person who sent it in was not available. I am responding to either an email or maybe a Gmail or a YBYG Facebook posting. You guessed it. I researched the answer and then lost the question. I'm pretty sure I stashed it in a Word file and then accidentally overwrote it. Those who know me personally are now saying, yeah, that sounds like him. Anyway, the Lost to Time listener sent two messages. The first showed photos of what looked like rose bushes. The flowers seemed to resemble a classic rose called the Fairy, as well as my long-lived landscape rose sold under the brand name Flower Carpet. These magnificent plants rebloom constantly throughout the growing season if you keep deadheading them, which means pruning off the spent blooms promptly. It is also disease-resistant, easy to no care other than deadheading, and is so prolific, especially as they get bigger. And what I love about them the most is the amazing way they produce up to 100 flowers per stem. And cut those stems you should, because the plant will then bloom even more prolifically. A normal summer produces thousands of individual flowers. The buds are especially pretty, a shade of red that I just adore. And the rose hips are big enough to harvest for teas and such. They also have a good job, a nice place of their own, and own a car. That's Flower Carpet Landscape Rose. Anyway, there are many more cultivars of this rose available today than the old original red one I have in my flower garden. I just looked at the varieties available today, and I like every color except yellow and white, which is especially hard to keep clean. However, the look-alike plants in question are not roses, which explains why our listener asked us why the plants kept dying off. Thankfully, they also sent a follow-up message saying, these might not actually be roses. I've been told they are coronaria roses. Does this help? Help, yeah. Botany is not my specialty. I am well-versed in compost, which almost everyone gets wrong due to uneducated and ill-informed advice, which is great because it keeps me working. A note to quote influencers. Alert, kitchen waste does not a compost pile make. And adding cardboard, paper, or other non-plant stuff is foolish. Yeah, those cute little plates and cups are, quote, compostable, but you'll be looking at them for years and they add zero nutrition to your finished whatever it will be, and neighbors will come and speak to you saying, hey, looks like you might have toxoplasmosis. Oh, and your compost pile stinks. And finally, yes, you can occasionally pee on your pile, but if you do, I don't know you, okay? I believe I have stalled on this answer long enough. I've covered the tangents, cotangents, as well as the hard-to-find and elusive secant and co-secant. So it's time for the answer. Our listener is correct. They have a rose-like plant called the coronaria rose, or the better known campion rose, which I have heavily implied are not roses of any kind. They are members of the genus Silene. That's S-I-L-E-N-E. And yes, our listeners' plants are dying, but it is not the listener's fault, at least this time. They are short-lived self-seeding plants, annuals and or biennials, which are plants that live for 2 years. Their Latin name means used for garlands, which I think is pretty cool. And they have achieved the Royal Horticultural Society's Award of Garden Merit, which is not given out lightly. Silene is a very large plant family. There are 900 species, and they're given common names that are wrong, so I'm not even going to try. Silenes are mostly hermaphroditic and pollinated by flies, which means they probably smell real bad if you get up close to them. What do we call garlic, the stinking rose? I think this would be a better version of that. Anyway, what's happening is not at all unusual. Matter of fact, it's the way the plant is supposed to work. So the way you deal with that is to sow fresh seed every season, and that's it. If you sow that fresh seed, you can achieve what looks like a perennial. Now, one last thing, you can buy the seed readily, but if you want to try to use the seed of your campion plants, you must let that flower die and then die again and then again to make sure the seeds inside are totally viable thanks to the flower's extra ripeness. Right, it is time for another phone call at 610-694-8100. Frank, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. How are you doing, man?
All right, but I got a flower problem.
Okay. Where is Frank and his flower problem?
In Bethlehem.
Bethlehem?
Bethlehem, PA, yep.
All right, so talk to me. What do you got? What do you need?
Well, we're doing okay with hostas on the side of the house. It's a double with a series of doubles, so everybody has like an alley between the homes.
Right.
Up front, roses, they absolutely love it. They're doing great. But we can't grow tulips anywhere. They come up, they wither, they drop dead. And they don't seem to like anywhere that we put them on the property.
Mm-hmm. What about other spring bulbs? Do you grow daffodils or crocus or anything?
No, we're not highly advanced, and I think we just landed on tulips because we like their color.
I will tell you that daffodils are bulletproof, and unlike tulips, which are often just one and done, daffodils come back year after year and expand their base. And I got to tell you, as we're coming out of winter, there's nothing better than a bright, shiny sea of yellow.
Mm.
But let me address your question directly. When do you plant your tulips?
We had been planting them like late winter going into spring.
Oh, why?
I don't know.
Well, you're easy.
I have no idea.
If you plant bulbs, especially tulip bulbs, too early, they can prematurely sprout, which will cause the kind of issue that you're seeing. But they have to be in the ground for at least 30 days before your first hard freeze. Wait to plant your spring bulbs until after Halloween, but before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
You want to give them enough time to develop a good root system and be ready to pop up on time. So, you know, I think it's simply, in this case, a matter of timing.
All right. We do want to continue to try with the tulips because we did have success with them in another place we lived, not too far away, Salisbury, up on the mountainside, and they just kept replicating themselves. They filled a whole garden area. They just kept expanding, and we were like, oh, this is great. Maybe it'll work here. But we'll try the different planting season, and then you recommended daffodils. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tulips are not known to reliably return like daffodils. But the ones that are your basic red tulip.
Good news. Okay, we can try that.
All right. You take care, Frank.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that the organization America in Bloom will present a free webinar titled Building Pollinator-Friendly Landscapes in Your Community at noon Eastern Time on Tuesday, January 20th. But don't go checking out all the details at the AmericaInBloom.org website under programs just yet, because we'll be right back with tips on making old potting soil new again and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Do you have vinyl albums, 45s, or CDs on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the donation, and you can claim a tax deduction. For more information, or to arrange for a drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up in just a little bit, what can I do with old potting soil? I will reveal the answer right after one of your fabulous phone calls. Call our number, 610-694-8100, extension number 3, because we really want to hear from you, like we heard from our next guest. Chelsea, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm just ducky. Thanks for asking.
Oh, good.
How is Chelsea doing?
I'm just ducky as well.
Okay. And where is Chelsea Ducky?
Well, I'm in Texarkana. I'm calling from the Arkansas side. That's where I live. But the plants I'm calling about are on the Texas side of Texarkana.
Gotcha. Are we still on the air in Texarkana?
Yes. Well, I believe so. I used to listen KTXK, but I mostly listen on Spotify now. But I think so.
Texarkana was one of the very first stations to pick up the show when we went into nationwide syndication.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Matter of fact,
I've been listening for quite a while, but probably not that long.
The two first shows were Texarkana and Waco.
Oh, wow.
So I know the area, and I think I know the answer to your question because you sent us some photos.
Yes, yes. Well, I'll tell you about it. I have somehow in the past couple of years found myself in charge of planting and maintaining the flower beds at my church. I got this big flower bed out in front of the church that it was mostly a blank slate. It's got just a couple of azaleas, but other than that, there were like some dead bushes in the back, I think like burning bushes or something. One of them was dead and the other two didn't look good.
Let me ask you a question. When you arrived, how did the azaleas look?
You know, it's hard to say. I don't remember a whole lot because honestly, there wasn't a whole lot going on in that bed, so I just didn't really notice it that much. But they look fine now.
Okay.
They bloomed very well in the spring.
So oddly enough, that indicates you have acidic soil unless you've added something to the soil to acidify it.
No, haven't added anything. Usually azaleas do good just about anywhere around here, so we don't have to worry about that too much, you know, unless, like you say, someone has added something to it. But
yeah,
no, they do well here.
I'm probably thinking of more southern Texas, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's a clue. That plant is telling you the soil is acidic rather than alkaline or normal. Okay, so tell us what you did.
Okay, so I put in some knockout roses in the back of this bed, seven of them. Uh-oh. I'm wrong already, huh?
Well, it's something I've tried to gently explain over the years, but knockout roses are overused, vastly overplanted, and they were bred to combat the existing rose diseases. And they were marketed heavily as the world's most disease-resistant rose.
Right.
But then the rose virus appeared. Mm. And, you know, as anybody who's taken antibiotics knows, you don't take them for a virus. The cold is a virus. The flu is a virus. Antibiotics are for bacterial infections.
And, right.
And they're more overused than the knockouts. So knockouts are very susceptible to rose virus. You know, that's what I call it anyway. I had it on one of my roses, and I thought the rose was doomed. But I just kept pruning off the affected parts, which you can see right away. They don't look like rose canes. they look more like young raspberry canes coming out of the ground. They're very reddish. They have little fingers coming out of them. And even though everybody said, okay, you got to trash it, what I did instead was I made sure I cut below the area of disease, cutting into healthy tissue, and trashed all of that.
Okay.
And that actually worked for a whole year, but I can't remember exactly when in the season I did it when it arrived for the first time. Next year, kept an eye out. Soon as I saw that rogue stem, would cut it off into the good part of the plant, put it in the trash. I know people don't like throwing things away because there is no away, but this is something that needs to be thrown away. You don't want to transmit that virus.
Right.
So this went on for 5 or 6 years. And all of a sudden, maybe I'll get a little shoot once or twice a year. I wanted to treat it like verticillium with tomatoes, that if the plant is big enough and strong enough, it can outgrow the disease, which is also good because the rows got so big, I was cutting at like chest height.
Okay. Wow.
Where was I? I was at Augusta at the golf course there. It was a volunteer. It was a local gardening group. They tended the flowers. And in the honor of a past member of the group, they planted a rose garden. It wasn't really that big, maybe 40 feet long by 20 feet wide. Every single rose was a knockout.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted to know what they should do. And it was like the worst grouping of plants I have ever seen.
Oh, no.
And I have seen some stuff.
I'm sure you have.
So what I told them, you have to pull up each plant, trash it. Some people say burn it. I don't like burning things.
No.
But you got to get rid of it entirely and clean up any trash. You can't leave any plant material there to convey the virus.
Right.
And then I told them they're going to have to go dormant for a year, but to cover the soil, which was terrible. You know, with Augusta, there's lots of sandy spots all around. Cover it with 2 inches of compost for a full year so that every time it rained, the naturally occurring microbes and other characters in real good compost, compost tea, would go down into the soil. And the living organisms in compost tea feed on plant disease. And then the next year, I told them, you know, there's old world roses, there are heirloom roses, there are tea roses, there are modern hybrid roses, there are the French landscape roses. You know, people had this drilled into their head, and it was just awful. But I've been in contact with them on and off, and yes, they have planted a true rose garden. They even did what I suggested, which was to plant both sides but create a path down the middle.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, exactly. That's what a rose garden is.
Right.
One of the rose gardens I saw from the members actually had serpentine pathways through it. It was beautiful.
Oh, wow. I bet.
Okay, so that's strike two. You got to get rid of the plants. Now, and I say this, please, people out there, I'm not making fun of our listener. I love our listener. But tell me what else you did wrong.
Well, I'll tell you what they look like. I didn't notice anything like you were talking about the canes that look different. I haven't seen anything
like that.
No,
the leaves. In the photos, the leaves were yellow at the base.
Yes. So the leaves, like starting from the base kind of going up. They've been turning yellow, and then the ones that have been yellow the longest have turned brown. So I kind of wondered about black spot, but I didn't notice. It doesn't seem like all of them have black spot.
If the leaves turn completely black, it is one of the blights.
Okay.
And blights are named appropriately because your plants are blighted. They must be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Get rid of them. Now, I'll cut to the chase. I also noticed that the roses seem to be growing against a wall.
Well, they're not right up against it. They're at least, 3 to 4 feet out from the wall.
Okay, then it was the picture. Now, tell me about the mulch I saw underneath.
Well, yes, I did. I know you don't like wood chip mulch, and I did use it against my better judgment. I would use pine straw, but we really can't find it for sale much here, believe it or not. I guess that's more like a Florida thing, I guess.
No, it's around you. I did a spot check, and many local garden centers and nurseries sell pine straw. It's the mulch of choice down south. And sometimes people have enough white pine or other types of pine to drop those long lengths of needles. But I don't think of Texarkana as that. It's very close to Georgia.
Yeah, yeah, we've got lots of pine trees, but you don't see it used as mulch much around here.
Well, clean up under the pine trees, and that's your free mulch.
Right, right. Yeah, I did have that idea for next year. I don't have pine trees in my yard, but I thought maybe for the church, maybe for next year, I can get with several parishioners and see, if everybody can bring a bag or two. We might have enough then.
And don't be afraid to buy some. If you've got a lot of, quote, helpers, everybody chip in. The bales are huge. The red pine straw is just amazingly colorful. And as you knew it, but you did it anyway.
Wood chip. You've never heard that before, have you?
Oh, yes. But wood chip mulch is terrible for so many reasons. The one I'm going to point out now is when it rains and plants nearby are showing a little bit of disease, the rain takes that disease down onto the mulch where it multiplies like it's in a petri dish. Whereby if you have pine straw underneath, the rain will go through, the plants will be kept protected from overly warm weather, they'll handle rainwater brilliantly. But if you go for the bonus round and mulch with compost, maybe even just around these plants, when it rains, the disease will still go into the compost where billions of microorganisms are waiting because they feed on plant diseases. So the disease gets washed down, and then, to continue the metaphor, it gets flushed away.
Right.
I will add one quick thing, like I know how to do a quick thing. Anytime you see a discolored leaf on any plant, pick it off immediately.
I did do that.
I want to mention to the other listeners that you do this for two reasons. One, there is a chance that that yellow leaf is a sign of disease. Any discolored leaf, certainly black ones, any discolored leaf that doesn't look normal should be plucked off the plant and put into the trash. This will help prevent the spread of the disease, but more importantly, it makes your plants look perfect.
Right.
People go by and they see these roses with no discoloration. They think of their nasty roses back home. And what they don't know is it's the same plant, but they're looking at it with 30% of the leaves removed.
Right.
You know, it's like when Saturday Night Live did the parody of Ricardo Montalban. It is better to look good than to feel good.
Yeah, that might be how these roses are right now.
Oh, and again, one last thing. Start taking counts, kids. Have you worked with your local extension office?
Not really, no.
Okay. They are a valuable resource. Are you born and bred Texarkana?
Kind of. I grew up about 40 minutes down the road over in Hope.
Okay.
Hope, Arkansas.
So you left Hope behind. Oi!
I did.
They will have lists of roses that like your area climactically.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are known to be healthy in your area, and, you know, pine straw is great, but if you can get the compost, it's even better. But if you don't expose the plants to wood chip mulch and the plant is highly recommended for your area, you're going to start out with fewer problems. All right, I think I've covered about 50% of the plant world. What do you think?
I think so. That's a lot of good information, Mike.
Well, it is my pleasure to deliver it. You take care now.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and repeat our announcement that the organization America in Bloom will present a free webinar titled Building Pollinator-Friendly Landscapes in Your Community at noon Eastern Time on Tuesday, January 20th. But don't go checking out all the details at americainbloom.org under programs just yet, because we'll be right back with tips on making old potting soil new again and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Fabulous Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the fabulous studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. What can you expect to hear next week? Hilarity, bad jokes, a small amount of useful information, and me. As long as these bolt cutters keep working. Boy, you know, this station must buy locks by the dozen. I'm Mike McGrath, and that's probably on the next You Bet Your Garden. Maybe. Plus your fabulous phone calls. Welcome back to an especially thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the thrilling studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're on the stretch now, cats and kittens. Coming up in just a little bit is the question of the week. What can I do with old potting soil? Right after one of your fabulous phone calls. Our phone number is 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Ernie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. How are you today?
I'm just ducky, Ernie. How are you?
Oh, I am blessed. It's a great day today.
That's great. Where is it a great day?
It's a great day in Redding, California.
Oh, that's up in the north, right?
Yeah, that's up by the Oregon border.
Yeah. Anyway, we have to get to a garden question, or the villagers with their pitchforks and torches are going to be breaking down the door.
All righty. Well, my question is, I don't know how to care for bromeliads.
Okay, you are not wrong to be confused. And I hate to correct a lady, but it's pronounced bromeliads.
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 Okay.
Yes. They are flowering plants without a well-developed root system, in the absence of which their central caps collect water and nutrients to support growth. They're actually epiphytes, in that they mostly appear in nature clinging to other plants. They adapt well to varied conditions and require little care. But, they have a unique life cycle. These beautiful plants bloom once, only once, when they mature, only to fade away after flowering. Now, I knew about your phone call in advance, and the best reference I found, which is unusual, is from a company called Hey Rooted, HeyRooted.com. I'll mention that the plants originate from Central and South America and really can only be grown outdoors in USDA hardiness zones 10 to 12. Very low maintenance, safe around pets.
Yeah.
Now, the bromeliad life cycle is all about these epiphytes, beautiful blooms, and, quote, pups, P-U-P-S, like baby doggies.
Mm-hmm.
It takes from 2 to 5 years for a new plant to produce that striking flower. After it blooms, the mother plant dies off over time, but not before its baby plants, called pups, appear first. Hence, a bromeliad lives from 2 to 5 years, depending on its specific lifestyle, variety, and placement. Through the pups, the bromeliad life cycle continues.
So they die and to replant, to keep them alive, you replant their pups?
Once your bromeliad starts turning brown, the pups begin to appear. You have to leave a pretty nasty-looking plant out there. This is like saving seed. You want to make sure the plant is fully mature. The next step is to trim off. This is after the pups appear. Trim off the old flower stalk to keep the plant neat. But you should continue leaving the mother plant in place until it naturally fades away. You should cut off the bromeliad flowers once they start turning brown or shrinking in size, which is a natural part of their life cycle. After blooming, again, that flower will not return. So gently remove it with clean scissors. They say to sterilize them. You know, this is nonsense, goes back forever. You can't correct people, but you sterilize medical instruments.
Yeah.
Not your pruners. Get real, people. If you're afraid, wipe them with white vinegar. Kids, Clorox. Now, I have no idea what to do with it. Drop it off at a waste disposal place. But don't buy it. Don't use it. Trimming these spent blooms helps channel the plant's energy into the development of bigger pups. You should continue to care for the bromeliad after flowering, as this will promote new pup growth. Eventually, it's best to remove the pups when they become strong and large enough, but keep them attached until they develop their own rosette, and that's like a flat part of the plant. If you don't remove the pups, they'll grow around the mother plant and share space in the same pot. This is not an ideal scenario because the pups need space to grow into mature plants, so it's good to remove the pups and plant them in separate pots. And again, I have to thank HeyRooted.com because their article on bromeliads was better than the one at Wiki.
Well, thank you very much. That's very informative.
So you should be good now, right?
Yeah, I'll take care of it now. I'll just let it do its thing and enjoy it while it's bloomed.
Once the pups get big, though, it is best to remove them from the mother stalk. Otherwise, that pot is going to get really crowded.
Okay.
And again, the mother plant will never bloom again. It's once and done. If you grow them out every year, you plant a lot of pups in succession. Lord knows, for instance, how many new plants you get. And then if there's a way to do it, stagger them so you have them blooming all the time.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
The bigger the pup, the faster the plant will achieve a mature size and flower.
Oh, good, good.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for your help on that one with bromeliads.
All right. Well, it's been a distinct pleasure speaking with you. You enjoy your unique weather up there.
Thank you very much.
Oh, again, it's been a real pleasure. And bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, it is time for the question of the week, which we're calling, should you reuse old potting soil? Allison, originally from Norman, Oklahoma, but currently surviving the furnace known as Austin, Texas, her words, she writes, I've been wondering what to do with used potting soil from my indoor houseplants. Every time I repot a houseplant, always with organic soil mixes, I can't stand to throw the old mix out, but I don't know what could be done to make it usable again. Adding it to a compost pile was my first idea, but the jury seems to be out on whether that's safe or whether it could carry previous pathogens to the next plants. Is there an amount of composting time that would resolve the problem? Internet searches suggest boiling the soil to sterilize it, but that seems ridiculously impractical. Would spreading it in the yard or outdoor flower gardens be of any use? Allison, I have to thank you for a great question. And this is a subject I don't think I've discussed in depth for quite a while. Anyway, it is a universal question that all serious gardeners face. Back in my early days of gardening, when saber-toothed tigers roamed the earth and there wasn't a lot of organic growing advice available, I chose to mostly mix the spent soils into my compost piles, hoping the mix would naturally cause the finished compost to be lighter and provide better drainage, thanks to the wonderful mineral perlite that's in all potting mixes. As to disease spreaders, a hot compost pile would cook out any pathogens in the soil and kill weed seeds. But that's a hot compost pile, not a cold one, both of which we will discuss in depth over the next couple of weeks. And in all my decades of doing this, I have never heard of boiling water to suppress plant disease. I have seen suggestions to use boiling water to kill weeds, which would not work, and would expose the person pouring to the possibility, make that probability, of some very serious burns, especially when sloshing. Think about carrying that pot outside to the garden. The only place for boiling water in the garden is in a mug containing a tea bag. Now, if a diseased plant grew in the container, trash the plant and compost the soil. I would not add potential disease organisms to my garden. But if you have a bed that can go fallow for the season, empty any suspicious soil on top of it, then solarize that bed. Solarization details. Don't believe anything else you heard. Pull out any tall plants, pull as many weeds as you can, spread the potting soil on top, level the bed as precisely as possible, and then saturate that soil with water, aiming to end up with a bed that literally cannot hold any more water. I'm not talking about watering that bed. I'm talking about drowning it. Then cover the bed tightly with clear plastic, not black plastic. You want the sun to go through that clear plastic and really cook the bed, not just heat it up like black plastic would. The plastic should be 1 or 2 mil thick. That's M-I-L, and that's how they measure this stuff. Pull it really tight over the soil, and then use bricks or rocks to hold the plastic in place. Make sure the plastic overcovers the area, and use more weights than you think you should. Leave that plastic in place all season long, starting early in the season and removing it only when it's time to plant your fall crops in it. Do not rush this process. Time equals success. Otherwise, I empty all my old container soil into 5-gallon buckets that I store inside for the winter. Come spring, I empty them all into a wheelbarrow, add lots of perlite and finished compost, mix it heartily, and then refill the pots. You can wash the pots out if you want, but I never have and don't think it's necessary. And no matter what, never use bleach. Bleach is a World War I trench gas, not a garden tool. If you feel you have to do something, use vinegar and rinse the containers well with water afterwards. The advice to, quote, sterilize your containers and seed starting supplies with bleach makes about as much sense as dropping that pot of boiling water on your feet. And please, use a lot of discretion and doubt when researching things on the internet, especially if it involves taking advice from other gardeners, and ignore non-organic information from extension offices, universities, and the like. Always remember that land-grant universities were created to promote the use of chemical fertilizers and toxic pesticides to farmers. Some extension services have come a long way since then, but some are still stuck back in the days of DDT. Well, that sure was a lot of soil-saving info, now wasn't it? Luckily, you can read those details over at your leisure or your leisure by following the link for the Gardens Alive Question of the Week at the top of the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes, my producer is threatening to steal my soil if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you, yes, you, can call us anytime, and please do, at 610-694-8100. Either listen to the prompts or show that you know what you're doing by immediately choosing option number 3. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're rich of refuse, teeming towards our garden shore at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. And again, we're begging you. Please, please include your location and visit our Facebook page where we post new photos of our gardens and invite you to send us photos of your precious plants and any toads that come into the picture. Share your thoughts about the show. We provide important and informative updates about the show. A link to the written version of the Gardens Alive Question of the Week, and links to our priceless podcast. All of that, and maybe even more, is at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when Godzilla married Mothra and a giant egg appeared under the tallest radio tower in Japan. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprow. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'm back from my short winter's nap, in which I did my best to imitate a slug. Without the slime, of course, unless you count a really runny nose. And I'll be playing catch-up ball until I see you again next week.